Welcome to Built to Go, a van life podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Wagg, coming to you from the College of Curiosity. This time it's episode 232, and we're going to talk about VanFest 2025 Liftoff, which is rapidly becoming my favorite place to gather with other van folks and talk about stuff. We're also going to talk about backup batteries, why you should have one, how to get one, and what you should look for when you buy one. A product review of the RV winterizing kit that I think everyone should have, even if you don't winterize, and a place to visit that you may have already been to, because I've decided to go back to episode 1 of the podcast and kind of redo some of the things. And I think I'm going to keep doing that as the weeks go on. I'm going to go back in time, back 230-something episodes, and kind of pick things and redo them to see how things have changed. Because honestly, as with most podcasts, things have evolved a bit. And when I listen to the first podcast episode of Built to Go, I find it a little bit cringeworthy because I hadn't quite found my rhythm yet. And I feel like I'm well-rhythmed now. So I would like to go back and maybe do some of the things that I did early on a little bit better. But before we get to that, I just had a brief conversation with Lance, the owner and steward of VanFest. VanFest got its start a few years ago. It was in Utah. It was pretty popular, and then COVID, etc., lots of stuff went on. And as I understand it, Lance and his wife actually bought the brand and have been trying to resurrect it, and they've done really well so far. I mean, last year's VanFest in Florida had hundreds of rigs. It was a big success. And, well, I'm going back. So here's the deal. I am going to VanFest 2025 Liftoff. Now, there could be as many as 3 VanFests next year. We will see. But the first one has been announced, is scheduled, and is ready to go, and you can get tickets now. And it is called VanFest Liftoff, and that is February 6th through 10th, 2025, on Florida's Space Coast. And that does matter, and I'll tell you why in just a second. This is actually in Viera, Florida, in a big kind of an open field where they do other events. I remember last year we were there, and there were a bunch of carnies set up because they had just had a carnival. We kind of had to share the space. I'm assured that this year we don't have to share the space at all, which is very nice. But I'm very excited about this. I need to get out and see people with my van. And it's kind of fun. When I go to the VanFest website at vanfestusa.com, there's a scrolling set of images at the top. And I'm actually in the images. I can see my ambulance poking out in some of them. And then there's a picture of me talking about podcasting that pops up once in a while. It's fun. I had a great time there. It's just a bunch of really cool folks. And I'm anxious to go back. So, should you go to VanFest? Yeah, I think you should. I mean, first off, if you're on the East Coast, this is one of the few major van life events on the East Coast. I know there's a lot out west. I get it. I mean, you've got Rubber Tramp Rendezvous. You've got Descend on Bend. I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff going out on the west because that's where the BLM land is. I mean, Schoolapalooza's out there. All this stuff I get. But folks, for those of us back east, it's a major investment of time and money to get out west. So I am real big on supporting some of the East Coast van life stuff. And even though Viera, Florida isn't exactly right down the road from me here in Chicago, I'm going to do it. And heck, if you would like to come and visit, I'm going to give 2 talks there. It looks like I'm going to be talking about 2 things. I'm going to be talking about stealth vans and how to choose the right van for your build out. And I'll do 1 each day. And you can come for just 1 day or you can come for the whole thing. But you should come because during the day, what you will see is a whole bunch of vans lined up and you get to tour the vans. If you're somebody just considering van life, I can't think of a better way to get a look at how so many different people are doing van life. And you're going to see the complete gamut of rigs here. You're going to see minivans, you're going to see SUVs, you're going to see schoolies, you're going to see giant Class A RVs, and heck, you may see an ambulance or 2. Actually, one of the coolest builds I saw last year was an ambulance, not mine. And it was a box style ambulance. It had a van front with a box in the back. And the guy who built out the box built it out like a ship. It actually looked like a sailboat inside. Incredibly high quality, absolutely beautiful. And from the outside, it looked like nothing. It just looked like a vehicle that you would ignore. But it was gorgeous, and I wish I had the talent that this guy had. But anyway, I would not have known about that if I had not gone to VanFest and walked around. So not only will you get to tour all these vans, you will also get to visit a whole bunch of vendors who are selling things, and you can actually talk to them about their products in person because the actual people are there. For example, I got to speak with the people from Cuddy Toilets and talk about how their composting toilet is different from most, and I ended up buying one, although as my life changed, I haven't ended up using it yet, but I still have it. And there's folks there who are selling electrical systems, there were folks there selling batteries, there were folks there selling microfiber towels. I mean, there was all kinds of little things to make your van life better. And being able to talk to the people directly involved with the products rather than just clicking on an ad or something really makes a difference in learning about whether it's for you or not. Now, this year, because last year was such a success, they've kind of expanded a bit this year. They're actually going to have some what they're calling away missions. You see, this whole thing is going to be space-themed because it's not very far from Kennedy Space Center. And in fact, last year, while we were just sitting around a campfire, we saw a launch from Kennedy Space Center. It's just, we knew it was coming, and we looked up, and boom, this rocket just took off. And even though we're like not right at Kennedy, we could still see it just fine. It was incredibly bright. We could hear it. We could see the massive smoke trail it left. So if you've never seen a rocket launch, you have a good chance of seeing one during VanFest. Now, the schedule of launches isn't out yet. I can't promise that. But you have a good chance. And heck, even if you don't, they're going to do an away mission to go to Kennedy Space Center. So you can go to Kennedy Space Center with a bunch of your other van life enthusiasts and hang out with them. And if you've never been to Kennedy Space Center before, it's kind of one of those American pilgrimages. And you learn a lot about how the space program isn't as easy as they make it look on TV. I mean, you especially learn about how dangerous these rockets were and what the explosive power of a Saturn V rocket was when they went to the moon. It's a very good tour. And then something I'm definitely going to try to do is what's called mission terraforming, where they're going to go to Cocoa Beach, which is, of course, the beach from I Dream of Jeannie, but it's also the beach right near Kennedy Space Center. And they're going to do a beach cleanup, which I think is great, a nice way to give back to the community. So we'll be able to go over there and spend the day walking the beach and picking up trash, which is a lot more fun than you might think. I mean, you're basically going to be beach combing, and some of the stuff you find might be interesting. I used to do this in Florida when my folks had a condo down there and found all kinds of stuff on the beach. And yeah, there was just some general trash, but there were also just curious things. Like we found a tag from a bag of oysters that an oyster fisherman had gathered in Louisiana, and we're not really sure how the tag ended up in Florida, but presumably it came out over the ocean, so that was very cool. And there's the famous hand boiler story that I've told in one of the podcasts that I found on the beach. So, yeah, you might be able to find cool stuff, and you're cleaning up the beach, and it's fun, and they're going to allow overnight parking over near the beach, and then at night we're going to go to a local brewery and hang out, so that's a very cool thing, too. And that's all new stuff. There's going to be somebody there who can custom die-cut decals and wraps for your van. You can talk to him and see how much that's going to cost and all that kind of stuff. And there's going to be a silent dance party. You know the silent disco? He doesn't want to call it disco, but, you know, there might be some disco. Who knows? And you put on the headphones and everyone's dancing, but you can't actually make a lot of noise. The nice thing about that is that the folks sleeping in their vans who maybe don't want to stay up all night don't get bothered by it, but people still have a lot of fun. So that'll be going on too. There's a talent show. There's a community potluck. There's live music and open mic. Some of the guys last year were really good. There was this one guy from Eastern Europe who just, his van folded down into a stage and he just grabbed his guitar and went, and he was amazing. And then there's some stuff that like local vans will organize. Like, for example, there's the Cheers Queers Happy Hour, and these folks are going to be doing a Cheers Queers Social Hour at their bus, which is named Bandit. You can come by and say hello. There's going to be morning yoga. There's going to be a chaplain service. The Trust in Jesus Ministries will be holding a service from their van. So it's kind of a little eclectic. You know, there's like something for everybody here. Having gone last year, what I can tell you is that everybody was super friendly. You know, sometimes you get a bunch of people together from all over the place and then these cliques form and some people don't get along, and there was none of that. Everybody was super friendly. In fact, I'm actually a little bit shy, which seems unusual for somebody doing a podcast like this. But if you meet me in person, unless I have a role, unless I'm like doing a job, I will probably be quiet and just kind of fade away. I'm perfectly happy to stay in my van and avoid all these activities. But somebody came by just knocking on the vans and said, hey, come with me, and just grabbed everybody and went walking around the whole site like as a big tour. And we became this big group of friends for the whole weekend. It turned out a lot of the folks were schoolie folks because that's where I was parked. And I hung out with all these amazing schoolie people. A couple of them were families who were living in their schoolies full time, and their kids were learning on the road. And it was a great experience. And yes, I'm going to spend this whole first segment talking about VanFest because I think it's that cool of a thing. And I think you should come. And Lance has done a really good job organizing the site this year. There's all kinds of stuff on the website. Again, that is at vanfestusa.com. Or if you want to go straight to the event, it's liftoffgathering.com. There's a Planet Fitness nearby if you want to catch a shower. Oh, bathrooms, they have a big bank of porta-potties. And it was funny because every morning, a lot of the people with the separating toilets would have their little buckets and they'd all walk over to the Jiffy Johns. And it was kind of a ritual. But nobody thought anything of it. You know, they're just walking down the lane carrying their little bucket of pee saying, hi, how's it going? Cute dog you've got, you know. I mean, it was just kind of refreshing, actually, that people could be real like that. Also, and this is important for those of you who are just exploring vans, they are going to have a tent colony this year. That's right, you can come with just your tent. You don't need to have a van or a vehicle you can sleep in. They've got a whole big space where they can set up tents, and there's going to be support for you there, and that's a great way to learn about vans. If you can get to Florida, this is an excellent way to see if van life is for you without spending a whole lot of money. I mean, if you just want to come for one day, and not camping or anything, if you just want to show up for the day, it's only $15. It's $15. This is not a huge investment. And if you want to spend the night, well, yeah, then it costs a little bit more. Tickets are about $145, but that lets you stay for the whole week with camping in Florida in high season, which if you've tried to go to a campground in Florida during high season, you know how very difficult that is. Now, if you want to stay in your tent, it's only about $75. And that's for two people. All these prices are for two people. These aren't per person. They're per vehicle. So you can read all the details. There's a whole bunch of different ways to do this. But I think you should come. I'm going to go. If you want to meet me in person, I'd be happy to meet you. I will bring stickers this time. I can't believe I went last time without any stickers or any promotional stuff at all. And people were recognizing me from my voice and, like, they didn't understand why I wasn't promoting my stuff because I'm just not like that. I am no good at the marketing stuff. But if you recognize me, if you see me, if you hear my voice, and you want to say hello, I would love to say hello to you. So sign up, plan on going. It's February 6th through 9th, 2025, at Space Coast Daly Park, whose address is 5775 Stadium Parkway, Melbourne, Florida, 32940. It's kind of near Vieira. And you will have a really memorable and good time. And potentially, you'll be making some lifelong friends. Special thanks to Kent, once again, for helping to support Built2Go by buying me a gallon of diesel at buymeacoffee.com/built2go. Folks, there are no ads on this podcast. Well, I suppose you could call the first part an ad, but don't. Don't call it that because it was content, I promise. But no ads. And the way I can do that is that folks like you will go to buymeacoffee.com/built2go and buy me a gallon of diesel every now and then. And I especially appreciate the people who are monthly supporters because they keep this going. They help pay the expenses with hosting the website and hosting the podcast and all that kind of stuff. And that means I don't have to have ads, so you don't have to listen to ads. Everyone's happy, so go ahead. Visit buymeacoffee.com/built2go. That's two T's, not three, not one. And I will get a gallon of diesel, and you will get, well, no ads. You get nothing, in a way, but it's a good thing. Van life news. We're going to go all the way over the pond to the United Kingdom, where, well, there's an interesting thing going on with their DVLA, which is their version of what we typically will call the DMV in the U.S., or if you're from Massachusetts, you call it the Registry of Motor Vehicles, because, you know, you got to be fancy if you're from Massachusetts. But This is a thing that has people a little worried, and it is that if you are over 70 years old, you can be automatically banned from driving motorhomes, buses, and certain box vans. Now, while a normal van is probably okay, if you have one of those larger vehicles and you're in the UK, yeah, they might just take your driver's license away simply because you turned 70. So, yeah, how do you avoid this? Well, it looks like they're going to make it automatic. Oh, you've turned 70, your driver's license is null and void. So sorry. And you have to be proactive to have a medical examination to get them to reverse it. Now, I don't live in the UK, and I've never had to deal with this organization. I do know that they cause people who are building out vans a lot of trouble because I see the comments on Facebook. Apparently, the definition of a camper van is somewhat controversial, and they will do everything they can to say, no, that's not a camper van. But they're also going to take your driver's license away if you're over 70. Before you turn 70, go through the process of being certified to drive, saying that you're safe to drive. And, you know, I'm not exactly opposed to this. I mean, while it sounds horrible, and hey, I'm not quite 70, but 70 is not that far in my future, I'd be pretty upset if they just took my driver's license away. And at the same token, I have seen people who probably shouldn't be driving. You know, you get older, your reflexes start to go, your hearing and vision aren't as good, you know, your ability to concentrate might not be the same. I mean, that's just life. That happens to all of us. But it happens at different times. And I know in the U.S. there's really nothing stopping anybody from still driving after they've become impaired with age. Some states have regular checks that you have to do every year or every 2 years. It varies by state, like almost everything does here now. But I don't know. What do you guys think? I mean, is this terrible, or does it make sense that at a certain age we should start checking people to see if they can stay safe on the road? I'm completely happy to have a conversation about this. If you want to talk about it, send me an email at jeff@builttogo.com. That's 2 T's, not 3.1. Or join our Discord server, or join us in our Facebook group. The links are at the top of the page at builttogo.com. Moving on to solar technology, there's a new kind of solar that actually sounds pretty cool. And this isn't terribly new news. This happened a while ago, but it was intriguing to me because it makes some sense. It's like thinking out of the box. So solar panels, in the briefest of explanations, take light and turn it into electricity, okay? Photons come down, they hit these circuits on your board, and the circuits turn them into electricity. Incredibly oversimplified. But as we know, there's more than one kind of light. And what these folks have done, and this is the Nova University of Lisbon who has done this, is they've made solar panels that will convert not only visible light to electricity, but also UV light. So light that we can't even see. And they're getting a 25 to 28% increase in solar panel efficiency with these new materials they're using. And the materials are based on something called perovskite. I don't know what that is. But if you hear that term perovskite or perovskite solar cells, that's this new technology where they're actually getting some energy out of the UV spectrum. And heck, why not? That sounds great. So right now, this is all, you know, experimental, of course. It is much easier to make something happen in the lab than it is to be having it produced. You know, you can't necessarily put into production something that works in the lab. But heck, research continues. You know, we thought we were at the point where we had made solar panels about as efficient as we possibly could. Maybe not. Maybe these guys are going to come up with something else, but that can only help us. And finally, this is not one news article, but as you know, I've been following the situation with these camping bans all around the U.S. And, you know, in other countries too, like in Portugal, it is illegal to do van life. In case you didn't know that. So when I'm searching for news articles, you know, I'm like, oh, what's in the news today? And I found, oh, look at this. Des Moines, Iowa has a new camping ban. Like, okay, what's this? Fargo, North Dakota, a new camping ordinance. Okay, whatever. Pensacola, new ban aimed at campers. Oh, man. Newport Beach, anti-camping law goes into effect. Bozeman, Montana outlaws urban camping. Missoula, Montana, new camping ordinance. And yeah, folks, I keep saying this, it hasn't really happened yet, but these are going to affect van life at some point. They're going to make it so that if you're just parked in your van, you can get a ticket, and they're going to start enforcing this when they want to. And I've said it before, that I know it's not aimed at quote-unquote us. They're trying to get rid of these homeless encampments in cities because people think they're ugly, or they think there's a lot of crime there, or whatever. But those people have to go somewhere. And I haven't seen any of these programs tied with a program to help these folks get someplace safer. And this gives the police a tool to use against any of us who a cop happens to notice and doesn't want us there. It just creates a situation where, like, I just parked on the side of the road so I could cook a hamburger can become a ticketable offense. And yes, Tennessee is the king of this because that's literally a felony if you do it on public ground in Tennessee. I will get off my soapbox now, but go ahead and look at the news. This is becoming a nationwide phenomenon where they're banning quote-unquote camping, and I'm really concerned we're going to get sucked up into it. TikTok. One of the things I talked about in the very first episode of Built to Go was backup batteries, and I really like this idea. This is something I got right early on. I think you should have more than one battery in your van. I think you should have, depending on how you're building your van, you should have a built-in battery, because that tends to be the most cost-efficient, and a reasonably sized power bank, like a Jackery or a Goal Zero or a Blue Eddy or so on and so forth. I don't really have a brand recommendation, but I think you should have one. Because stuff happens. And you especially want to have a backup battery because sometimes you want to do things away from the van. So to me, the ideal setup is to have a healthy battery bank in your van. So 200, 400, 600, 800, as many hundreds of amp hours as you can reasonably fit in there. And then have a good size luggable power station that you can use elsewhere or as a backup. I can't tell you how many times I've been camping and I've thought, oh, I want to go sit at that picnic table, but I also want to charge my phone. Or I also want to use this air fryer or whatever. And I just pick up the Jackery 1500 and carry it over there and I'm fine. I don't have to worry about being tethered to the van. And then, you know, I plug it in and as I'm driving, it recharges and it takes a long time, etc. But I don't have to worry about it. So if you don't already plan on getting a power station. Now, if you're doing a no build and you're going to use a power station as your main power, which is what I'm planning to do when I build out my truck, get another one. Have another one. It doesn't have to be as big. For example, if you had a 1500 or 2000, the numbers actually do mean something. Generally, they're how much wattage, and there is a relationship between that number and how many amp hours it has. But basically, bigger is better. If you had a 2000 or a 1500 in your no build, get a 500 as a portable one besides. And this is especially true if you are somebody who needs power for things like a CPAP. For me, what I do with my CPAP is I power it off of the power station. I don't power it off the main batteries. That way, it's isolated. No matter what happens with the main batteries, I know I have power for my CPAP. That's always going to work. I also do that with the heated electric blanket. I power that off the power station rather than the main bank in the van. That way, I have control over it. You know, if something goes wrong, it's not going to completely kill the van's battery. It gives me more options. So I'm not going to give you any recommendations on brands or anything like that. There's been a ton of sales lately. But really, it is definitely time to have a power station in your rig, even if you already have one. I currently own three. I used to own four. I gave one away. Now I own three, and that's probably overkill. But they all get heavy use, and I've had them for years now, and they just work. So, heck, seriously, if you're building out a van, budget for a power station in addition to whatever you're going to use to power your van. You will be very, very, very glad you did. product review. I mentioned a while ago that I managed to blow up my hot water heater in the Tiki Bago. I don't know what I did last year. Now, the Tiki Bago is not rigged for winter camping at all. I mean, it's got a furnace, but there's no hot water bypass, and it's difficult to winterize. And I've managed to do that with just a whole lot of antifreeze is how I've been doing it. But last year, for some reason, I completely overlooked the hot water heater. So the hot water heater wintered over with water in it, and it exploded. In the spring, when I went to put water back in the Tiki Bago, water just poured out the side, and I looked, and yeah, the hot water heater was... It's an aluminum tank in the one I have, and it was just cracked open. There's no fixing that. That's it. I have to replace it. I'm going to deal with that next year. But in the meantime, I bought a bypass kit, which isn't a big deal. But that's not what I want to talk about. I want to talk about this other thing I bought that actually has a great use. And this is for my Airstream, but it should also be for your van as well. This is a winterizing kit. Now, what it is very simple. It's a valve that screws on to your water pump. If you have an on-demand water pump, this is the thing you want to get. It's a valve that screws onto the water pump. You unscrew the inlet hose, put this valve on it, screw the inlet hose back onto the valve, and then there's this flexible plastic hose that comes out. And what it lets you do is use a different water source than your main water source. Now, one of the obvious uses for this is so you can run antifreeze, propylene glycol, the pink stuff, through your system without having to fill your water tank. So you can drain your water tank and just leave it drained, and then use the minimum amount of antifreeze to run through the lines. And where it's really important is inside your faucets, because that's where the little areas are that are going to explode. Or your toilet. Those are the places that are actually going to give you trouble. So that's what it's for, and it works great for that. And you'll end up using like half a gallon of antifreeze rather than maybe 7 gallons if you just fill up your tank and have to do your hot water heater and everything. But as I was installing this, I realized this is good for other things too. For example, let's say that you wanted to disinfect your lines for some reason. Maybe something grew in there or something. Well, you could run a bleach solution through with this without filling up your tank with bleach water. Or let's say you're camping and something goes wrong with your main water tank. Like let's say, oh no, your water tank has something in it and oh, there goes all your water. Well, you can actually then use this and run a whole new water source. You could just stick this hose in a bucket of water or into water that you bought from the store or whatever. It's a great little resource as a backup in case you need to get water or any other liquid through your system. I mean, heck, if you wanted to, you could stick this little hose in a bottle of vodka and have vodka come out of all your taps. I mean, you could do whatever you want, but it's meant to be used for antifreeze, but honestly, you could use it for anything. So for $16, I think people should just put these into their rigs anyway. Even if you're never going to winterize your van, having this way to easily get other liquids into your lines in your van is a super useful thing, and I'm going to install it on all my rigs now. I don't know why I didn't think of this before. My van is actually kind of wired this way to begin with. I don't have a permanent tank, so I don't have to put it in there. I just have a hose that I dip into a jerry can, and that's my water source. So for that, it doesn't matter. But for the Tiki Bago, which if you're new is a 1973 Winnebago Indian, a big old fashioned RV, and the Airstream and the Scamp, those three campers that I have, I'm definitely going to add one of these, and, well, I think you should too. So there's a link in the show notes. They might be on back order this time of year, but take a look, and you might be able to find other ones. It's a simple, good thing to have that's going to give you flexibility, and heck, you may not know when you need it. But when you need it, it's going to be a lot easier than taking apart all your plumbing, trying to find a way to get a liquid in some way. Tales from the Road. The very first tale from the road that I ever told was one of the weirdest. You know, it's funny, I did not go back and listen to what I said the first time, so it'd be interesting to compare and contrast and see how much I remember years later, but I'm going to tell the story anyway, just kind of blind, and then give a follow-up, because I have a follow-up that I didn't have when I first did the episode. So back when I was crawling around going to all the Auroras in the United States, a project I'm still working on, I had to go to Aurora, Nevada. And that's a hard one to get to because Aurora, Nevada is a ghost town. It's south of Hawthorne, Nevada. Takes a while to get there. And I had gone to Aurora, Utah before that. So my stop was Aurora, Utah, and then Aurora, Nevada. I needed a place to stay. So I had spent all day in Aurora, Utah, needed a place to stay, looked at the map, and I found a place near Sevier Lake that looked kind of interesting. Now, Sevier Lake is basically a dry lake. It's not really a lake. You're certainly not going to swim in it. And it's in western Utah, and it's gigantic. It takes up like half the state out there. And I had never been before. I mean, even though I lived in Utah and I was aware of the lake, I'd actually never gone out and seen it. So I didn't know what to expect. And because I spent all that time in Aurora, I didn't get there till after dark. But, you know, we've got GPSs and I can follow directions. And so, you know, I'm going down the road and I found my turnoff. And this is past Delta, Utah. There's nothing out here. There's no civilization whatsoever. Completely rural. And I'm instantly on this dirt road, which I expected. And I'm going down the dirt road, and there are jackrabbits everywhere. Holy cow, I have never seen so many jackrabbits. In fact, it was hard to avoid hitting them with the van, which at this time was my NV200. And, you know, I'm not going very fast. NV200 is not exactly an off-road vehicle. I'm taking my time. But it gets darker and darker and darker, and it was a moonless night, and I couldn't see anything except what my headlights showed. And it's not enough, honestly. If you get out into these really rural areas with no light, your headlights don't show enough. You can't look around and see anything. You can only see what's in front of you. And I found that a little disconcerting because I knew I was near this lake, but it was hilly. And if I didn't pay attention, I could end up in a bad spot. So I was very carefully trying to get to this camping area that was marked on my map. And I found it, but I couldn't really tell where I was. Like, I couldn't tell if I was stopping in the middle of the road. Was I stopping in the lake? I had no idea, and I couldn't get enough light on anything to really figure it out. So I hoped for the best. I looked around. I didn't see anything, and I thought, well, chances are there's not going to be anyone else out here. Anyway, I camped for the night. But as I was getting ready for bed, I saw this incredibly bright light that looked like it was miles away. Just really bright. It was so bright, it really felt to me like somebody was shining a light on the van. But it was, again, it was so far away, I thought that couldn't be what it was. But what the heck was it? Remember, I said this was out in the middle of nowhere. There weren't any buildings or businesses or anything like that. There's no cell phone service. There's nothing. So what could be giving off that light? Well, the only answer is another vehicle or other people or something. I have no idea, and I didn't have any idea, and I figured I would never know. So I went to bed, woke up, and was very anxious to look outside the van and see where I was, and I found that I was on this bench overlooking the lake. Now, this is a salt flat, basically, and I was on this white mound of salt is where I had actually ended up. Not really near the lake, but close enough that I'm glad I stopped where I did. And I took a walk down to the lakefront and realized there was a road that went along the lake. So after getting ready for the day, took the van and drove up that road that looked like it would hit back up with US 6. And that's what I was aiming for. And I realized I was going to be going in the direction of the light that was there, which obviously wasn't there anymore. I thought, well, maybe I'll see what the light was. So I'm driving along this lake, and there was a turnoff to go out and drive on the lake. And, you know, hey, driving on salt flats, you know, like Bonneville, everyone's, oh, that's like the thing you're supposed to do, right? First you get a drone, and then you go drive on salt flats. And yeah, right, that's the van life dream. Whatever. But I actually did want to drive on the salt flat. So I went down this road that clearly led to the salt flat, and I was like, wow, I can just go as fast as I want. And then I saw a sign. It said basically, if you pass this point, you will get stuck. And I was like, And so, discretion being the better part of valor, I parked the van and walked out past the sign. And yeah, this might be a dry lake, but the mud wasn't dry. I sank in up to my knees in this salty, thick mud. And if I had driven out there, my van would probably still be there. So I'm glad I heeded the sign. And I could see from the tracks that other people weren't as smart. They were clearly, you'd see like these tracks heading out and then this massive disturbed area of mud with lots of footprints and then giant ruts coming back to shore. People had had a bad time here. And I'm like, okay. So I thought, oh, that was fun. I got to see my Salt Flat, and even though I didn't get to drive around, it was still interesting bit of geography and geology, and I got back in my van and started heading towards US 6, and I saw something I didn't expect to see, and it was a boat. Now, remember, this is a dry lake. This thing never has enough water in it to use an actual boat on, but there was a powerboat kind of in this clearing off to the side. And I had to go check that out. It wasn't on a trailer. It was just high and dry. And there was graffiti on the side. And the graffiti said, "Poor boy." You know, it was kind of like, I don't really like graffiti, but this was kind of that nice graffiti where someone had used just different colors of paint and tried to make it look good. And so, you know, I went over and looked at it and just like, well, this is weird. I thought someone must have just dumped this boat here. And then there are enough people around here that they would do graffiti. I mean, it didn't make any sense. And I looked a little closer, and inside the boat, well, it looked like there was a dress, like a blue cocktail dress in there. And next to that, I found a maroon brassiere. Like, that's weird. And then I found some panties. And then I found a black wig. And this, to my reckoning, was about where that light was that I had seen the night before. And I don't know what I'd missed, but apparently the night before, something was going on here. Now, I don't know if there was foul play. I don't know if it were people having fun, maybe without clothes and a video camera. I don't know. I don't know why a woman would undress and then leave in that state, or why she would bring a second set of clothing, take off the first, and then put on the second and leave the clothing there. I mean, bras are expensive, right? Folks, I do not know what happened. And I have searched the internet and Google. I mean, this boat had giant poor boy on the side. Surely someone else must have seen it and taken a picture. Couldn't find anything. So a couple years later, after COVID and everything, I went back out to Aurora, Utah, and to Aurora, Nevada. And I went to that same spot just to see if the boat was still there. And it wasn't. The boat was gone. Somebody had gone out there and removed this boat that had no trailer. And, it's just a mystery. It's one of these mysteries I would love to know what happened, and I probably never will unless I just happen to come across somebody who was there that night with the bright light. Aliens? No, probably not aliens. I'm almost certain there were no aliens involved. But, I don't know. It's not hard for my mind to go to dark places when I find stuff like that on the side of the road. A place to visit. So, not having scratched my driving on the Salt Lake bed itch, I went down the road and went to a place called Lunar Lake. And I've talked about this a lot because it was one of the most fun things I've ever done in my van. Lunar Lake is a dry lake not far from the Utah-Nevada border. It's in Nevada. And it's called Lunar Lake not because it looks like the moon, but because, well, actually, yes, because it looks like the moon, but it's where NASA actually trained some astronauts on how to deal with the moon. Next to Lunar Lake is a place called Lunar Crater that actually does look like the moon, and they had astronauts train there. And so the lake bed next to it, which is a dry lake, salt flat, it's called Lunar Lake. It does get a little bit of water at one end, but it's really just a salt flat. And I've been out there twice, and wow, it is well worth the trip out there. It's a little bit rough. You have to go past this little ranch that's a little rough, but I was able to do it in the NV200, which means just about anything could do it. And then you get out there, and it's just big, wide open, miles of nothing but salt. And it's not like Bonneville Salt Flats. The salt is hard, and it doesn't get stuck all over your vehicle. You can drive out there and come off and your vehicle will still be clean, which was awesome because I've seen what happens to vehicles that go out in Bonneville. They're all encrusted with salt, not at Lunar Lake. Now, the northern end of the lake does get a little mushy, so you want to stay away from there. But the rest of it, I mean, if you want to see how fast your van can go, yeah, I think you can here. There's literally nothing to hit. And I spent the night out there once, and it was glorious. I mean, all alone, out in this otherworldly environment with this big moon that came up. I mean, I took a time lapse and everything. It was great. I loved it. So I will have a link in the show notes for where Lunar Lake is. If you're driving through rural Nevada from Utah, I highly recommend you stop at Lunar Lake and see it. It's a better place to take your van out and do photography and stuff than Bonneville, in my opinion. There are fewer people, and it's a much cleaner kind of salt. There is one problem with this place that I ran into the first time. There's this road that goes right by the lake that goes to Lunar Crater. And you can go up there and check that out too. That's fine. But on this road, there are these little turnoffs onto the lake. And you go on the turnoff and you're out on the lake. But it's not straight. So the turnoffs kind of wind their way through some bushes and then go out into the lake. And the effect is that when you get out on the lake, you can't see where you came from. You're not leaving any tracks. So I got lost in the middle of this lake. There's nothing there, but I couldn't find my way off the lake. You can't just drive off anywhere. You have to find one of these trails. So word to the wise, bring something to mark the spot that you went on the lake on. Anything, just something you can see. You know, one of those orange bicycle flags would be perfect. Not that people travel with those. But leave a chair or a cooler or, you know, some bottles of water or whatever. Something you can see. So when you get out on the lake and have your fun, you can find your way back. Else, you're going to be circling the lake for hours trying to find the hole to get out of there. Yeah, which was a little disconcerting. Resource recommendation. I have been playing with this new app called Minushi, which is the plural of minutia. And that is spelled Minutiae, Minushi. And you can find this on your app store, but the website is minushi-app.org. This is a very strange app, and this is only going to appeal to some of you. It's called an anti-social media app. So I'm going to read from their website to try to help you understand what this app does. Minushi is an anonymous anti-social media app. No profiles, no likes, no comments. Once a day, at a random moment, everyone receives an alert. Capture whatever is in front of you then and there. It will turn on the camera and you can just wait and it'll take a picture of whatever you see. And then it'll show you a picture that somebody else took anywhere in the world. And then it saves them all. Only your images. The only chance you get to see the other person's image is right then and there. There's no way to save it. I mean, you can take a screenshot, but there's no way to save it in the app. You'll never see it again. And then it will save your images so that after you've collected enough, you can go back and look at these little moments from your life. It's like an art project, but it's been kind of fascinating because it can go off anytime. You don't know when it's going to go off. And then, so I've been taking pictures of, you know, the river property or what I'm working on the computer or whatever. And then the images it shows me are just all over the place. There's a picture of a guy petting his dog. I got a picture of a shower curtain. And the one today was a picture of a couple sitting at a table about to have a meal in Moscow. And their table was all laid out and had all this stuff on it. And you could see all the different products they have and stuff. Really kind of interesting. So this is an app for thoughtful folks. It has absolutely no practical use that I can discern other than it makes you remember that you're living in a moment. It makes you record that moment and it makes you share it with someone else. And who knows what they're thinking when they see it. Now, this app is free, but you can pay for it. And what you get when you pay for it is basically more time to take the picture. If you don't pay for it, it gives you a very limited window. And if you're in a situation where you can't take a picture that moment, well, then you just miss it. And that's okay. You're going to miss some of these moments. You can't get them all. But if you pay, you support the project and it gives you more time. And I liked it enough that that's what I actually did. Definitely read the FAQ before you do this because it's a little bit hard to explain. And very briefly, because I didn't understand this, what you're going to do is it's going to tell you to take a picture. You just hold the camera where you want to take the picture of. It will count down and then take the picture. And then a little square appears under the picture. When that square turns black, then you tap it. And then you will see the other person's image. And then it will go away. and you will never see it again. And you will not know who that person was or where they were or anything like that. And yes, there are some restrictions. If you take pictures of certain things, people can report them and you can get in trouble with them, you know. But I don't know. I like it. So anyway, that is at minushi-app.org. I'll have a link in the show notes. And if you want to experience life in a little bit of a different way, this might be an app for you. Well, folks, thank you very much for listening to episode 232. Music, as always, is by Simon Wagg. If you would like to get a hold of me or yell at me or curse me out or say nice things, you can do that at jeff@builttogo.com. That's 2 T's, not 3, not 1. And until next time, remember the words of Ellen Burstyn, who said, "What a lovely surprise to finally discover how unlonely being alone is."